News, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is the CBS News World News Roundup Late Edition, sponsored by O'Reilly Auto Parts.
I'm Christopher Cruz. New concerns from the Secret Service. Acting Director Ronald Rowe says the apparent assassination attempt on former President Trump in Florida shows what the agency is dealing with.
What occurred on Sunday demonstrates that the threat environment in which the Secret Service operates is tremendous and under constant threat.
Today, Rowe said the Secret Service and others share the blame for the assassination attempt on former President Trump in Pennsylvania in July. CBS's Reed Cowan says it won't be business as usual for the Secret Service.
There will be changes within the operations of the U.S. Secret Service, not only how they work at the federal level, but also things they learn from failures in the communication level between local officials in Butler, Pennsylvania, local police in Butler, Pennsylvania, when that assassination attempt happened.
Georgia's election board has voted to require hand counting of ballots.
Election board chairman John Fevere, who voted against the rule, says,
I am just concerned about the legality of some of these and whether we're overstepping our bounds as a board.
Those concerns are also shared by Attorney General Chris Carr, who told the board in a letter that the new rule is not supported by current state law. Republican member Janelle King says she respects the opinion.
But ultimately, the decision is up to us, and I know that we were within our statutes.
Election officials say the change will cause delays in November. Supporters say it will ensure voter confidence. Jonathan O'Brien for CBS News, Atlanta.
The motive for the killing of a district judge in his chambers in a small town in Kentucky this week still hasn't been revealed. More from CBS's Omar Villafranca.
There are a lot of rumors swirling, especially in a small town, but nothing concrete. But we do know that based on court paperwork, there was a 2022 case in which a woman sued, saying a local deputy coerced her into sex acts in exchange for leniency on her punishment, and those acts took place in Judge Mullen's court.
State police say they believe Letcher County Sheriff Mickey Steins got into an argument with Kevin Mullins and shot him multiple times. The Israeli military says an airstrike in Lebanon killed a top Hezbollah commander. CBS's Bradley Blackburn reports the U.S. has been looking for the man since the early 1980s.
Ambulances rushed through downtown Beirut, bringing the wounded from Friday's airstrike to the hospital. The attack occurred in a neighborhood known as a Hezbollah stronghold. Israel says the strike killed Ibrahim Akil, a senior Hezbollah commander who was involved in the 1983 bombings at the U.S. Embassy in Beirut and a Marine Corps barracks that killed more than 300 people.
The Postal Service said today it will not hike stamp prices this January as it usually does. On Wall Street, the Dow closed up just 38 points, enough for another record high. This is CBS News.
Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all your car care needs. Get the parts and service you need fast from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Seth here, host of Over the Back Fence. We're on the air live every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 12 p.m., taking your calls to buy or sell, talk local events, or whatever, only on WFHR.
Civic Media News, I'm Derek Tritz. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The latest on the Kennedy ballot case. The Wisconsin Supreme Court announced Friday they will be deciding whether or not Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s name will need to remain on the ballot. The Wisconsin Supreme Court will be trying to reach a decision as expeditiously as possible, as election clerks have already begun sending out absentee ballots with Kennedy's name on them. Kennedy has been trying to remove his name from the ballot in battleground states in an effort to not take away votes from Donald Trump, whom he endorsed in August. Senator Tammy Baldwin has introduced a bill to help businesses who rely on a cold, snowy winter when we won't exactly get one. We had a mild winter last season, slowing down tourism. Seven counties across northern Wisconsin lost an approximate $6.5 million. The Winter Recreation Small Business Recovery Act would help small businesses qualify for disaster relief when they don't have the weather they need to thrive. And that's what you need to know. I'm Derek Tritz, and this is Civic Media News.
Jordan Love might be ready to play this week. Hi, I'm Jimmy Cusco with Sports, filling in for Mike Clemens. It seems all anyone can focus on is the quarterback situation in Green Bay. Jordan Love was hurt in the season opener, but he might be available to play this Sunday. Love said he had a lot of thoughts when the injury happened.
You know, when it happened, it was very painful. I'll tell people it was the most pain I've been in on the field. So, you know, just a lot of emotions, but definitely very painful and, you know, didn't know in the moment what might have happened, you know, what the injury actually was, how long I might be out. So it was definitely a scary moment.
If Love can't go, Malik Willis will get his second start. His former team, the Tennessee Titans, hosts the Packers Sunday at noon. The NL Central champion Milwaukee Brewers lost Thursday 5-1 to the Arizona Diamondbacks. The loss puts the Brewers 3 games back of the National League's best record. Same 2 teams tonight in Milwaukee. Wisconsin basketball, both men's and women's, announced their conference schedules on Thursday. You can see them at uwbadgers.com. Filling in for Mike Clemens, I'm Jimmy Cuska with Civic Media Sports.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear tonight, a low in the mid-50s. A mix of sun and clouds, a shower or storm possible tomorrow afternoon and evening, high in the low 80s. Partly sunny, much cooler, only upper 60s Sunday. A few showers are possible right in through Monday. Right now it's 76.
Jane Mattenair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Mr. Global will be here to talk about gas and energy prices. Send in your questions to Jane Says at civicmedia.us.
Mattenair on air, weekday mornings at 10.
You're listening to locally grown radio, WFHR, home for Mattenair on air.
You're listening to pre-recorded content produced by Civic Media.
Broadcasting live from the Civic Media Studios in Green Bay, this is Nightlight with Pete Schwabba, your inside source on everything entertainment from Wisconsin to Hollywood. Whatever gets you through the night, it's all right, it's all right. And now, a man barely 6 feet tall, but a mountain of muscle, Pete Schwabba.
We are back for hour number 2 of this Thursday night edition of Nightlight, broadcasting statewide from our beautiful studios here in Green Bay, Wisconsin, downtown Green Bay. The studio is in disarray. Conrad is surrounded by monitors. I don't know what kind of tomfoolery is going on over there, but we have more monitors than probably the Pentagon. It's going to be exciting when everything's done.
It's going to be great.
It's going to be fantastic. So coming up at 7:35, Kristen Schrader will be here to talk about Fall Fest in Dodge County. That'll be fun. And right now, we are going to... This is really exciting because I love history. I love Wisconsin history. And we have so many cool things in this state that people need to know about. And I hope that this next segment brings awareness to one of these places. It is my pleasure to welcome to Nightlight Black Point Estate Site Director, David Desimone. David, how are you?
Oh, fantastic, Pete. Thanks for having me tonight.
It's my pleasure. Am I saying your last name right? It's not Desimone, is it?
DeSimone.
Oh, I like it's very.
Hey, just imagine if that S were capitalized. It probably was at one point.
That is such a much more exotic name than Schwabba. I'm very envious of you, David. That's a great name.
I don't know.
Name.
Schwabba's pretty good.
It's okay. I'll take it. How you doing?
Oh, fantastic. Just really had a great summer. You know, we're a seasonal attraction.
Yeah.
So we depend on this, you know, extension of summer through September. It's been 80, 85 down here. So yeah, just been really, really busy, which is good.
Yeah, absolutely. So you live in the Lake Geneva area, I assume, or do you live on the grounds? I hope that's not a silly question.
Yeah, so technically it's not a silly question. I do live on the original estate grounds.
Wow.
But the family that donated this property in 2005 kept the farm. So I am a tenant. I rent the farmhouse. So it's a nice separation from work and, you know, my residence.
Yeah.
But I'm close enough to come out at 2 a.m. when there's a bat flying around in the building and I could be back asleep in 20 minutes. I have really the best of both worlds.
That sounds pretty cool. This sounds like such an interesting job. I kind of don't know where to jump in here. So I'm just going to ask you, you work at one of the, as I understand it, as our friend Rebecca said, 12 Wisconsin Historical Society sites. And this is one of them. Tell us about Black Point Estate. Give us a little history and how it came to be where it is right now.
Well, there's sort of two different tracks for the history of the site. There's the Chicago beer baron by the name of Conrad Seip. At one point is the largest producer of beer in the United States. Only for 2 years, loses that title to an outfit in Milwaukee by the name of Pabst. But the Seip family owns and occupies the summer residence from 1888 through 2005.
Wow.
It's just a phenomenal story. It's a lovely long run for, you know, a summer residence, a summer cottage, if you will. And then the second track is about a 10-year-long struggle for the fourth generation family members to donate it to the state of Wisconsin. I won't go into a ton of the detail, but it's full of intrigue and local politics and the haves versus the have-nots and a lot of litigation. The short version is the neighbors were concerned that a private residence becoming a museum would do three things. It would lower their property values. The state might not take care of it, and it would be overrun with tourists. Hmm. And, you know, I can kind of get people fear the unknown. But it takes about 10 years, and you want to talk about a John Grisham kind of legal novel type of thing. There's a Hollywood movie and just the making of how this property becomes the state of Wisconsin and how the Wisconsin Historical Society ultimately takes over operation.
That is real. Okay, so the family owned it. The Seip family owned it until 2005. That money, right. That family money lasted that long?
Believe it or not, beer is a great business.
No doubt.
You know, I always say beer, especially at that time, was a low-profit, high-volume business. So okay. Water, not safe to drink, and as these cities are emerging and industrializing. And if we believe our good friend at PBS, Ken Burns, his documentary on Prohibition states that the average working class, like blue-collar guy, is drinking between 21 and 24 beers a day.
Oof.
So, you know, you're making a penny on a bottle, but it's you're making a lot more money on beer than a bar of soap.
It's a lot of bottles. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay. So in 2005, the Seip family gives it up. And tell us about the grounds, if you will, and the house. Like, it's a big Victoria. It's a beautiful house. I went to the website and I was kind of looking at a little virtual tour and pictures. Tell us about the house itself and the grounds, please.
You're absolutely right. It's this big the technical style of the house is a Victorian stick style, but it really has this almost lighthouse motif to it because there's a tower. Many yeah. Victorian homes have a tower or a turret. This is sort of over-exaggerated. It juts high above the roof line. All of these homes on Geneva Lake were situated facing the lake. That's the kind of the main thoroughfare. There were always cart paths and footpaths, but most of these titans of industry would come from Chicago by rail to Lake Geneva, then get on a steam yacht, and that's how they would get from door to door or place to place. We are situated on initially 27 acres. It's a house, wow. Like literally it's the house high up on the hill, overlooks the lake. And then the property's expanded to 100 acres around 1900. That's when they purchased this farm, a couple of additional side lots. They also hire a landscape architect about that same time named Olaf Benson to really create a family compound or like a private park.
Okay.
There's four sisters in that first generation that all end up with lake houses. So it really becomes, there's at one point four of these Queen Anne's, these large Victorian homes. You can imagine, your sister's extended family, something like 34 bedrooms between the four houses. And they were vacationing all summer long in the Victorian era. They would be here, at least women and children. And, guys like us, we would have to hop on our steam yacht. I know it sounds tough. Get back onto that train and then maybe get into Chicago about 9:30 or 10 o'clock on Monday morning and then work the week and then come back on Friday night.
My guest is David DeSimone. He is the Black Point Estate site director, and he's got a pretty sweet crib there, kind of on the grounds, but also has his own thing. It's not a bad setup. You can take tours. David, when is the last time before it became a historical site that people live there, like regular people use the house?
So one of my favorite stories, I didn't get a chance, Pete, to meet the donor. He passed away a year before I started. Okay. That was Bill Peterson. But we have a lot of VHS interviews with Bill and two brothers and a cousin because it did take about, like I said, 10 years to get through the legal ramifications of how to make this work. But one of my favorite stories that's passed on to me is the last weekend of the summer of 2005. Bill knows it's going to be donated to the state of Wisconsin. Everything's set, and there's going to be a ceremony like Monday morning. And the story I'm told is Bill gets the time confused. He's thinking it's going to be like noon or 1 o'clock. About 8:39 in the morning, some state bureaucrats and some politicians show up, and there's a knock at the door, and he's got a house full of guests. So they literally used it right up until the last day.
Oh, wow.
And what's remarkable about it, Pete, is all the stuff was left behind. So it's Victorian furnishings, artwork, bed linens, medicine in the medicine cabinet from the 1920s, 1950s, right through the 2000s. It just became this like layering of history over 117 years of family vacationing.
Did you almost just want to leave it like that? I mean, to me, those little relics of personal items and stuff like that, that's what I love about art. That's what I love about history, is connecting. And I know they're just little maybe pill bottles from the 20s, but that's fascinating stuff.
And you're absolutely right. And so when we started to develop an interpretive plan for the site, we left most of those little mementos. It could be a hand-drawn map, a bookmark, toothbrushes in the toothbrush holder.
Wow.
Because we didn't want it to necessarily feel like a decorative arts show place. We wanted it to feel like a very much loved and lived-in home.
Yeah.
And museums often aren't provided that opportunity because a lot of those personal items are gone.
Yeah.
But in this case, because they were left behind, we hear that all the time. When guests come in, we're not the most grand historic house in the state. That might be the Pabst Mansion or Villa Louise.